Hello and welcome to the Politically Speaking Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Chris McDaniel, a political reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. I'm joined today by
Jason Rosenbaum of the St. Louis Beacon,
Joe Manis of the St. Louis Beacon.
After the tragic events that took place in Connecticut on Friday, many have been looking to our elected officials to do something about it, so that something can be changed for the future. On a national level, President Obama has announced a task force being led by the vice president. Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill has voiced her support for a ban on assault weapons.
Well, reinstating the 1994 to 2004
right.
assault weapons ban. And Senator Blunt, Roy Blunt, I've talked to him on Saturday, and I talked to him again on Wednesday. He is not saying specifically that he's against it, although he's sending out signals that he is, but he's being very careful with his wording, which indicates that, you know, I think it depends on the proposal. But he's basically saying that the bigger focus needs to be on mental health and on tracking people who are mentally ill and have a potential for violence. That's where he would like to see the focus. And he's a former educator, so actually he takes somewhat of a cool view to what Jason's been hearing in the General Assembly.
Well, I'm blunt for just a little bit more. On Saturday, he told the Kansas City Star that he didn't think
Sunday.
Federal...
No, that was Monday.
Yeah, that was Monday.
That was Monday. He told the Kansas City Star that he didn't think federal gun laws would change anytime soon. And then in a conference call with reporters yesterday, he didn't take a step back from it, but he did admit that he said that he was too willing to talk about what would happen
in the
future.
Well, look at the practical composition of the United States Congress. You have a Republican House, and Republicans, by and large, tend not to favor gun control laws, although that's not absolute.
Sure.
And many
Democrats, too.
And there are some Democrats, because there's been this specific strategy on the part of Democrats to appeal more in, you know, less Democratic states by finding politicians that – you know, are against abortion and ascribe to be pro-Second Amendment. And I mean, a lot of that is similar in the Senate, although you've seen some quote-unquote pro-gun senators like Joe Manchin and Joe Donnelly, you know, talk about how there could be a conversation. Now, what that conversation is and what they're willing to do, you know, is unclear. But the reason I bring that up is, I mean, While Blunt's statement might be jarring in the light of this event, I mean, it's basically speaking to the practical realities of Congress.
Right. Sure. And so on Wednesday, he kind of walked it back to what he said on Saturday when he was here. And I talked to him and also Mr. Lloyd from your...
Yes, from St. Louis Public Radio.
Yeah, from St. Louis Public Radio and then another radio reporter. We were the only three reporters who were there. So he talked to us at length, and at that one, he really didn't – when we asked him specifically about the assault weapons and that sort of thing, he sort of demurred and kept it focused on the mental health issues. And I did ask him, though, about the emerging talk at that time of possibly arming teachers or putting more guns in hands of administrators. And Blunt, who is the former teacher and who also – had been a former president of a university in Southwest Missouri, was very cool to that idea. And on Wednesday, he was equally cool. He didn't come out and say he was against it, but he raised a lot of questions about it.
I think his quote was, "I'm not sure that that's the takeaway from this, that we should have more guns in schools."
Well,
was what he was saying.
But that's the exact piece of legislation that was introduced on the 18th.
Go ahead. Talk about that.
It was by Representative Mike Kelly of Lamar. He introduced this bill that would allow teachers or administrators to, with concealed carry permits, to carry on in a school. He told me that there's a lot of details that aren't fleshed out yet, like, you know, where a gun would have to be placed, whether it be in a safe or whether it be on the person, or whether there would have to be some sort of alert system to teachers telling administrators or administrators telling superintendents, you know, that they have a gun. You know, Joe and I were talking beforehand about the liability issues that would probably have to be worked out. But bottom line is, I mean, that was an idea that was floated not just by Republican legislators, but also by St. Louis County Police Chief Tim Finch. Right. I believe he talked about that on Monday, and it caused a pseudo-national news for him bringing that up.
Right.
He talked about it on Monday, and then he did more interviews on Tuesday. He was on St. Louis on the Air yesterday, on Wednesday. He was on national news, too, for NPR.
Now, St. Louis County Executive Charlie Dooley, who I talked to on Tuesday after the county council meeting, and several of us asked him about Fitch. Dooley didn't take a stand directly on it, but he said there likely needed to be a discussion on more security in public school districts. But he specifically made clear that this is a decision before for the public school districts, which, frankly, in Missouri, are pretty much their own little kingdoms. Mm-hmm. That he said, you know, it's kind of up to them. Now, there are two points of discussion on this. And I want to say first, I'm from a family of teachers. My dad was a teacher and an administrator. My sister's a teacher. This is in another state, but my husband's a former teacher. So I understand some of the culture on this as far mm-hmm. as where the teachers look at it. The liability issue is not a minor issue because let's say, for example, if you're going to allow a teacher or administrator to be armed, there's the potential, especially, I mean, that in a junior high or high school, they would have to be careful as far, like if they're wearing it on their person, that it could be snatched from them and used against other students. And the school district would be mucho liable in that extent. If they keep it locked up, I can attest from family experience that locking up something valuable doesn't necessarily mean a student still won't get in it and get it.
Right.
And let's say in a grade school, the teachers have to keep it locked up. Well, kids might still get in there. And then what happens? How the district might be liable if a kid hurts another kid? Or in the case of what happened on Friday, if somebody shows up with an assault weapon in your schoolroom and starts blasting, you're not going to have time to go to your desk or your safe and unlock and get the gun. Maybe the others in the building might have more time to do that. But it's unclear whether or not that really would have changed what happened on Friday because virtually all the deaths took place within a few minutes.
And it occurs by people, you know, most of the time wearing some sort of bulletproof vest and people who, you know, aren't concerned with their own lives.
I just want to point out that wasn't the only idea that's been floated in light of this. I talked with Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal of University City, who's also a school board member of the University City School District.
Yes, good point.
And I really wanted to reach out with her because I thought she had a different perspective than a lot of legislators. And, you know, she was just kind of dealing with the aftermath, the fact that two University City School District students had been shot dead, even one before and one after this. And from talking with her, it was kind of a multifaceted approach in her eyes. You know, part of it's gun safety and possibly restrictions on firearms, but a lot of it is taking a look broadly at how schools are dealing with the issue of school safety, how they're kind of reacting when a student may show signs of mental illness, something more broad. She didn't really say she had a specific answer because she said that a lot of this hasn't been studied yet. But if that's something the legislature pursues, you know, it may not provide, you know, right or wrong answers per se. It might provide a lot of solutions that are going to cost money and may have unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. But it wouldn't surprise me that if that became more of a consensus idea to react to this sort of thing than Representative Kelly's bill, which I'm not saying, as I said on this earlier, you never want to say something's never going to pass or will pass.
Correct.
but something like that is, I think, even a proponent of that idea, Stan Cox, told me it's not going to be something that's going to be, you know, it's going to be something that's going to encounter a lot of resistance and controversy. So it will remain to be seen what will happen on a state legislative level. But I know that other states are looking at this, you know, in different ways. I think I saw that the governor of Colorado was announcing, you know, examination of their mental health system. And I think Governor Quinn of Illinois, I saw a press release about, you know, kind of looking at school safety issues. So this is going to be something that state legislators, I think everywhere, are going to be looking at least for now. So
I think there definitely will be a discussion about it, mm-hmm. whether or not, I mean, what happens with it. But I think people do need to realize, regardless, I mean, I'm not taking a stand on this or anything, but what you see in movies where somebody's able to take out the killer with one shot and the killer doesn't have body armor right. or whatever, it's not, I mean, real life isn't the movies.
Yeah.
So regardless of, and I think that's, for good or bad, that's true. And I think this will at least elicit a discussion. And as journalists, we love to cover discussions.
Yeah. Well, it's looking like the special election for Joanne Emerson in Missouri's 8th Congressional District might happen sooner than we had previously expected, right, Joe?
Possibly, but there's no guarantee. Here's kind of what's happened. Secretary of State Robin Carnahan, as everyone here knows, about a week ago put out an estimate saying that to hold this special election in Southeast Missouri's 8th District, which now actually comes up to the bottom half of Jefferson County, it's going to cost about $1 million for this special election to elect the successor to U.S. Representative Joanne Emerson, who announced a few weeks after her reelection that she was leaving in early February to take a job as national head of the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association, which is basically the conglomerate of several thousand rural electric cooperatives, which is where many rural people get their electricity, and which is pays a lot more, probably close to $2 million a year with benefits. So, and she's very excited about it, and she has a lot of expertise in that area. So, she will likely be a strong head of that new of that association. That said, all the jockeying here is over who might replace her. The party leaders pick the nominees. But anyway, she has said she would leave. Her last day in office would be February 8th. Well, since then, the congressional schedule has come out, and the House, U.S. House, will actually be out as of February 6th for a few days. Mm-hmm. So when I was talking to her her press person over the weekend, he confirmed that she now is offering to actually resign sooner if the governor, Jay Nixon, who formally will call the election, if he will call it for April 2nd, which is a normally scheduled statewide election date in Missouri, where municipalities and school districts already have stuff on the ballot.
Right.
And the idea being it would save a lot of money.
Yeah. Let me tell you why that might be in, you know, I am not a political strategist and I do not dispense advice. But let me tell you a scenario why that may be in the Democrats' best interest to follow Joe Emerson.
Okay.
Joanne Emerson's request. Now, we've talked before about on this podcast this possibility that, you know, Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder might get this nomination.
He's from Cape Girardeau, yeah.
There's some uncertainty about what would happen, whether the governor can appoint his successor, whether they're
Has appointed successors in the not yeah. this governor, but other governors.
Well,
so, yeah.
You know, as you mentioned,
and the Republicans challenged that.
Yeah, Tim Jones, the House Speaker from Eureka, has floated the idea of possibly passing a law to make all statewide officials, elected through a special election.
Correct.
Well, if the election's going to be in April, and the writing on the wall is that Kinder's going to get the nomination, even if they pass that bill. There's no – I don't know what the timeline Nixon has to veto that bill. But, I mean, if they pass it really close to that election, there's no guarantee that Nixon is going to veto or sign or take any action until, you know, after the election happens. So it makes me think that, you know, if that does happen, it could just be a situation where they're not going to be able to institute something like that in time for that office to be vacant and for Kinder to be put there. So, I mean, there will still be uncertainty either way, because if Nixon tries to appoint somebody, I mean, there could be a court challenge or there could be a lot of different other things. But it would kind of make the timeline harder for Republicans to go forward with changing the law if it was, you know, still within the legislative session, as opposed to in August, when I believe Nixon would have to take action on that bill by July. So I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well, it depends. There's a time frame within after a bill passes. But I think Nixon so far hasn't said anything at all about what Emerson has said. And you're aware you're correct. When I talked to Speaker Jones last week, he did talk about that bill. And but I think that I think one of the reasons the Republicans are starting to look at that bill is because they may realize, while if you look at the wording in the Constitution, there are questions about whether or not the lieutenant governor should be, if there's a vacancy, should be appointed by the governor. Mm. But there's a trail of action. Yeah. Where at least two or three times governors have appointed the replacements, which means that the courts might well say, well, this has been the pattern. You can't question it now, 150 years later. And so by passing the bill, it's probably the smarter thing for the Republicans to do to eliminate any questions about this.
Right. And I may have just my explanation of that may have not been the most clear. And I just think the bottom line is, if it's in April, I just think that the legislative trajectory for that type of bill is going to be a lot harder to accomplish. I mean, again, I can't predict the future. I'm not a strategist. There could be a certain time frame where the governor has to act, even if they pass it within the legislative session. I frankly don't know the answer to that. But I mean, it just seems like getting that through in an April election where there would be a result and there would probably be a vacancy pretty quickly, it would just be a difficult thing to pull off.
And this may be academic. I mean, Lloyd Smith, sure, who's the executive director, who had been the executive director of Missouri Republican Party, a former top aide to Emerson, also looking at this. He's already stepped down, presumably to start talking to all these Republican leaders in the district. I think we should know, I'm betting, within a few weeks, at least behind the scenes, who's got the edge among these Republican leaders. And that may be another motive for Emerson. She may want to, as soon as, okay, presumably, although she's not endorsing anybody, but presumably she would sort of behind the scenes favor Smith. If Smith happens to get the support lined up, she may want to step out and get them to name him as soon as possible and not drag it out, mm-hmm, and give Kinder or one of the other various ex or current legislators who are looking at it time to outmaneuver Smith.
Well, here's my question. Do you feel that Smith would be a strong enough, like, if he's picked as the nominee, he'll probably win the special election, right, be a congressman. But do you think he's strong enough to ward off, you know, the endless list of people we've talked about in 2014?
I don't know. I think it depends on the climate. I mean, I've known Lloyd for a long time. He's a real sharp guy. I think some of it will depend on what issues come up in Washington. I think some of it'll depend on whether or not other Republicans deem him vulnerable, and part of it'll have to do with money raising.
Yeah, like I've said, I've heard conflicting things.
Yes,
like some people say yes, some people say no, and I could see a scenario where, like an Ann Wagner type scenario, you know, like Lloyd Smith, she was never in elected office, but
just
she raised
powerful behind the scenes.
She was powerful behind the scenes. She raised so much money in the run up to that primary that really any other person who was thinking about it wasn't going to be able to really compete. And I could see a similar scenario happening like that, but I don't know. It's hard to say at this point in time.
It really will depend on a lot of factors. Well, and a lot of these people, I mean, she and Lloyd know each other really well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could be that some of the more establishment Republicans like Wagner and others, if they line – now, this is assuming that they would line up behind Smith. They might not.
Right.
I mean, but some of them had defected from Kinder because of the stripper problem, mm-hmm, a year ago. So, you know, it's this behind-the-scenes drama. Now, one thing is, on Wednesday, I did ask Blunt, because I had heard that he might, as arguably the most influential Republican currently in office in the state, that he might play some sort of behind-the-scenes role. And he denied that. He said he wasn't going to get involved, which I thought he was pretty specific about that. Yeah. I thought, well, that kind of curbed some of the speculation that was out there.
Well, let's close out with some good news here. Joe, I'm hearing that the state budget is looking to be a little bit better this year.
Yeah, this
budget
is,
problems are
well,
bad.
Of course, and hey, these are projections and things can happen. But the staff for the Senate and House budget leaders and the governor's budget people had been spending the last couple of weeks negotiating on what sort of estimated revenue would be for fiscal year 2014, which begins July 1st. Because frankly, most of the legislative session is spent putting together a budget. I mean, that's like the main thing that they do. And the bottom line is they agreed on a estimate, and for the general revenue, it'll be just under $8 billion. And it's about $237 million more than what they appear to be taking in this year. Mm-hmm. Now, what's key about that? That's not a lot of money. But what's key is that this is the first time since 2008 where the projection has been higher than the previous year, I mean, as far as without any cuts planned and with no reliance on federal money. This will be the first budget, frankly, since the governor took office, where they won't need or hope for a big infusion of federal money to balance it, much less, and that there's already talk of what cuts need to be made. This time, for this budget, no one's saying we're going to have to cut anything. They're not saying they're going to have to add money, but they're indicating that if things go as planned, they actually might have a cushion of a few hundred million dollars, and that's even with the business franchise tax continually being phased out. So that, for that standpoint, if their estimate turns out to be true, that's good news.
Well, that just about does it for the Politically Speaking podcast this week. You can find all of our stories at beyondnovember.org. You can find all of my stories at stlpublicradio.org. You can find all of Joe and Jason's stories at stlbeacon.org. You can follow me on Twitter at CS McDaniel. You can follow Jason on Twitter at
Jay Rosenbaum.
And Joe Mannies
at Jay Mannies. I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, and this will likely be
the last of the year. We're taking next week off. We think we've earned it.
And we think our listeners have probably earned it, too.
But Joe and I will actually be on St. Louis on the Air next Wednesday at 11 to talk about politics and this year in politics.
The day after Christmas. So we'll still be
around. So don't worry. if you're missing our voices around the Christmas time, don't worry.
And Jason will be out of town on assignment.
In Chicago. If assignment means loafing around and eating pierogies, then I plan to get an A on that assignment.
Well, we will be back at the start of the new year. Until then, so long.
So long.
So long.